everyone, and welcome to another episode of Upzoned, where every week we take just one big story from the week in the news that touches the Strongtown's conversation in some way, and we upzone it. We talk about it in depth. I'm Kia, and I am back this week with Chuck Marone. How are you doing, Chuck?
I'm doing wonderfully. We're having like some weird, it happens every year. We're having some weird kind of rebirth of summer. We actually pondered, like, do we turn the air conditioner on? Because it was like 85 and humid here in Minnesota. But now it rained and it's all pleasant again.
Well, I know that you are probably having to acclimate to Minnesota weather a little bit more because you just got back from the first week of the Strong America Tour. How was the Pacific Northwest?
It's always delightful. And I think what makes the Pacific Northwest the most delightful for me is that the people that I meet there are always kind and generous. We started out in Spokane and just had a huge turnout. We were at Gonzaga University in their law school, and it was a beautiful venue and it was packed. There were people in the balconies. It was crazy. Went across the state, wound up with Chelan, Seattle, and then up into Victoria in British Columbia. And at each place along the way, people were just enthusiastic and kind and generous and huge crowds. And it was a crazy lot of fun.
Oh, I'm so glad. And Ken Moore as well, we should mention, was included in your Seattle stuff. We had a greater Seattle area and they were awesome. And we published an article from them that everyone should check out. Well, you can explore more about the Strong America Tour on your own time, but we should get to the matter at hand and talk about this very unusual article that was actually recommended to us by our colleague, Daniel Harrigus, our senior editor. It is called Utah Home Builder Offers Cash Prizes for New Ways to Increase Affordable Housing, and it's from the Salt Lake Tribune. So Daniel saw this article and he said, I really can't decide about this one, Chuck and Kia. I feel like part of me thinks this is really silly because this is the second year of this contest. There have been many like it. The ideas they came up with are core Strongtown's ideas that we've had for a long time. Make ADUs, accessory dwelling units, easier to build, loosen up zoning codes, things like that. But maybe there's something to this that I'm not seeing. So he asked us to talk about it, and I wanted to ask you what you thought about it. Do you think the cash prize to solve the nation's affordable housing crisis is a good idea, a bad idea, or a why not idea?
I do think it is silly in a sense that Daniel may be suggesting, because I think it kind of suggests that like there is a way to do this when in fact we've made the case for a long time here. The housing is a complex adaptive system. There's so many crazy things going on. The one thing that we know to do is to start taking small steps and kind of, you know, nudging the system in a different, more viable direction. So I feel like the intellectual concept behind this is kind of silly. Maybe that's where Daniel and I would agree. I've always been fascinated by the idea of prizes. This is a home builder who's doing this. And let's just pause here and say for a second, doing this marketing campaign, right? I mean, I'm sure there's some intersection here between what the home builder, the people who run these places are human too, and they have altruistic motives. And I'm sure that this is a very nice intersection between something they would like to see and something that is good for business. And that's fine. Businesses do that all the time. But the idea here that you would put some kind of cash prize for like the best idea is something that has fascinated me in the realm of medicine, and particularly in like prescription drugs. There's this highly debated and like very controversial sense that this is what we should be doing in areas where there isn't a market in a sense to pursue a drug. So let's say that there is a specific drug that would be really beneficial, but there's only 50,000 people who need it, or 25,000 people, or whatever the threshold is. And to develop it would be really complicated, take a lot of time, a lot of energy. And so in a pure market sense, a business might look at this and say, we're not going to pursue that one. That one's too high a risk and too low a return. In that sense, would a cash prize basically create the kind of incentives for either the marketplace or some like crazy wacky person in their garage who has a passion to innovate some type of solution? And in that case, prizes can work really well. I think what you're talking about with this, find us the one needle in a haystack and we'll give money to someone who does that. And instead, like How do we cure obesity? Maybe someday there'll be a pill that we'll all take and we'll all have bodies like Brad Pitt and some supermodel. You know, I don't know. That seems very unlikely. What's far more likely is that prolonged diet and exercise and good healthy habits of sleep and eating and a well-balanced life and might be really good for obesity. For most people, there's some people who, you know, that doesn't work, but for most people, that might be helpful. This is a great idea that's maybe being like slightly misapplied because it's a good marketing shtick, right?
No, of course it is. And I will say that most of the people who have won this have not been weirdos in their garages. They have been other companies who have, you know, services that they want to provide. Though that said, one thing I do like about this prize is, like you're saying, Chuck, it's rewarding a plurality of possible solutions to our housing crisis, because you got to do a lot of things and you got to try a lot of things if you want to solve specifically not just any housing crisis, but your community's unique housing crisis. There isn't a silver bullet. So some of these ideas are things like, you know, a modular construction technique, which is like, okay, like in St. Louis, I'm a little bit weary of that, but I'm a little bit less weary of, you know, the Alley Flat Initiative, who I believe we've talked to at Strong Towns out of Austin, which is basically a nonprofit group that pushed for a new zoning approach for mother-in-law apartments in Austin, and it worked. And it is a big part of why Austin is making some forward momentum today. What sort of innovative ideas would you give money to, Chuck, if you were running a contest like this, out of curiosity?
It's funny. I have this insane idea. This is really crazy. How about we take the people who live in a community, we have them deposit their money in a place. We pay them interest for that money. And then we use that money to invest in, like, let's say, building their homes, their neighborhoods. You know what we could call it? We could call it a savings and loan. How does that sound?
I see what you're doing.
I think when we talk about ADUs, we talk about modular construction. To me, one that is obvious is just the whole idea of ridding our minds of tiny homes and just looking at all these gaps in between everything we built and saying, like, a house could go there. And maybe it would be a smaller house than the 3,400 square foot sheetrock palace we're building on the edge. But, you know, a tiny house, pretty affordable too. And maybe someone could live there and over time add on to it. I feel like there's, in a sense, almost like an all of the above. I use the savings and loan idea just to show we're really so far divorced in our housing conversation from anything that would resemble, to use the term, common sense. And I hate when people say, well, it's common sense, because, you know, everyone's idea of common sense is different. But I mean, we're so far divorced from just functional reality when it comes to housing, that the simple idea of a savings and loan, which is so basic, we can't even pull that one off without, you know, securitization and secondary markets and like insane economics. Why can't we just go out and build a small house? You know, like, why is that not okay? Your neighborhood, my neighborhood, we can walk through them and we can identify the predominant feature of our places, even though we live in more urban places, are huge gaps in the streetscape. Go out to the suburbs and that's all it is. It's like 80% nothing, with a little home here and there. Why can't we fill these in with houses, like small homes? I don't get why this has to be a big mystery, actually.
I agree completely. And I would just add that while also I take a little bit of frustration from these like bonanza contests that treat the housing crisis as a mystery that we don't know how to solve, when like we really just need to like increase access to banking. I would also say that it silos off the idea of a housing crisis from all of our other elements of our development approach, right? Like, I probably would not win this contest if I said, okay, my idea to solve the housing crisis is to put a small employer on the same block as places where there is already housing so people could live there and make a living. Why can't we talk about our transportation network, which requires us to think about how to squeeze more homes into like already saturated markets rather than how do we thicken up the areas where there's room to thicken things up? And those questions are, I think, really integral to the Strong Towns approach and why the Strong Towns approach appeals to me, because we're asking ourselves, like, how do we make our community stronger no matter what axis we're working on, rather than how do we fix housing, which makes you start looking at every nail as if you're holding a hammer.
I think you're absolutely right. And there's a great insight. I do feel like we run that. It's kind of a byproduct of the efficiency model. And, you know, the fact that we've siloed all these conversations off from each other. I had a class in graduate school called, it was something like land use and transportation, or transportation and land use, or some, you know, something geeky like that. But the whole idea was, hey, have you ever pondered how the way we build is tied to our transportation system and vice versa? And I'm like, well, gee, you know, shucks, like I never considered that. And it's funny because I was in a class of very brilliant people who of course have considered that. But the idea that that would be like a special class for people who at a graduate level want to delve into how to build places by unlocking this mystery of the relationship between transportation and land use, it just shows you how far away from this concept of human habitat we've become. We're totally fine with thinking about like a grizzly bear or a bee and looking at like their complex habitat. And we're completely open to the mystery that maybe this habitat co-evolved with them and is like refined to respond to not only their urgent needs of getting food and rest and what have you, but their more subtle needs. We're completely fine to that. And then we go to human habitat and we're like, oh, this bizarre relationship between this and this. We, for some reason, become just dumb again. It's a mystery to me.
Yeah, it's a little like looking at a ruined beaver dam and saying, like, we used to make steel beaver dams, as opposed to talking about the river and the current and the food supply and this like very, very complex thing, because we think that animals are completely unlike us, and they're not.
Right.
Yeah.
Can we talk for a second about the idea of prizes?
Yes.
For cities? Please.
I was really interested in that angle.
I know we talked about this before, about the little contest that we did and my dad and how he would, we did talk about this before on Upzone, didn't we?
We have, but let's remind people who are not necessarily long-term listeners of what you're talking about.
Okay. The idea was we had this contest where we're trying to get ideas in a neighborhood. And the idea was to give everybody, 20 people, $100 and have them go out and try something. And the only requirement was you're going to go try to make the neighborhood a better place for people to live. And my dad, who's a sweet man, but kind of a curmudgeon, I told him about this. And he said, well, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Someone's just going to go buy Christmas tree lights for their house and, you know, waste your $100. And what he didn't grasp and what he didn't appreciate was that the $100 was being spent as a payment to discern who had a good idea, because the people who had the best ideas, we were going to give way more money to. We see this with the way we hire people here at Strong Towns. You know, if you just look at their proposals or their resumes or what have you, first of all, you create this weird bar of entry. And second, it's hard to really grasp what they're talking about. When you give them $100 and you say, go and do something cool, and 20 people do something and 10 of them are like, yeah, okay. But five of them are like, wow, that was really awesome. You are a really smart person. It's a low cost way to figure out who's got a great idea. Businesses do this all the time. And that's why when I saw this article with the Utah home builder, I'm like, well, okay, it's a marketing gimmick, but maybe they're also fishing for ideas. Like, this is not a dumb thing. Cities and local governments are so adverse to this. We'd rather form a huge committee, invite all these people in, go through months or years of process, discussion, study, hire consultants, basically cover our rear ends before we make any decision. When if we could just lean into it, and I think this prize thing is one way to do it, say, hey, here's the problem we're trying to figure out. This problem, if we can figure it out, is worth $1 million to us. We'll give $25,000 to whoever figures this out. To me, like, why wouldn't we do that? That is a really smart thing to do. And for some reason, government just culturally can't accept that.
Well, I think that for some reason, you kind of alluded to it just now, is it's a liability issue and a perception issue, right? Like, I feel like our cities were sort of, you know, it's not a small deal to cities to be able to say to their taxpayers, like, we've tested this theory. Like, we paid a bunch of professionals $200,000 to do a traffic study on this corner before we put in like a single crosswalk, you know, like this is like, we spent the most money and made the best good faith effort. Culturally, that is something that is either commended or required by law in a lot of places. What advice would you have for cities to cool it basically on those sort of concerns and embrace something that's a little bit more chaotic, a little bit more dangerous to the type of person who thinks that we need to have every idea be like stamped by 19 different bureaucrats before it ever reaches the public, but might actually be a higher return for your city?
Right here in my hometown, we've got the highway that runs through the middle, cuts the whole north side off from the south side, cuts, you know, my neighborhood, which is five blocks north of the downtown, cuts it off from the downtown. It's horrible. My daughter walks it every day on the way to school, has to cross over the street. And she has actually said, unprompted by me, I love walking through here, but I find Washington Street, Highway 210, to be very scary. And it's true. So to me, we're looking right now at redoing this street, and they put together this grand committee. It's got all the important people in town. Note, I'm not one of them. All these important people in town. No, it's very true. And it's okay to talk about what to do. And I think if we were going to approach this in a different way, a contest might be a way to do it. I would love to see, there's a building along this street called the Shop. And the Shop is like a quasi youth community center, like assistance kind of place. Basically, it's a place for young people who don't completely fit in to go and hang out and have a safe place. And they give them productive things to do and counseling and all this kind of stuff. It's a cool place. I would love to get ideas from them. You all don't have cars. You all walk this all the time. You all are going across here daily. What would you do? I would love them to go to high school and say, hey, give us your ideas. The fun thing is when you start asking young people who are not like encumbered by all the life that someone my age has lived and all the things that come along with that in terms of bad habits and poor intuition, they tend to give you a lot of crazy ideas, but that's cool. They also give you a lot of like kind of virgin thoughts that have deep insight and intuition. I feel like if we want to take seriously this idea of chaotic bottom-up innovation, we should be using contests like this. And it doesn't have to be money. I mean, you could just say, you know, we'll have a day to celebrate you, or we'll rename something for you, or I don't know. I mean, we could do all kinds of things.
It's a heck of a college application piece, if you can tell.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Right. Yeah, Brainerd Youth Innovator of the Year. Exactly.
Right, I mean, totally.
These are like things we can do for our community. Like, why wouldn't we lean into that heavy and really embrace that? Let me throw out the cynical, much like this Utah home builder. If the city just wants to do it because it's good PR, do it because it's good PR. But you know what? You might actually get some great ideas too. What would keep us from doing this? I think just our own fear of having our inadequacy of our own ideas revealed. I mean, to me, that's the only real reason not to embrace this kind of approach.
Yeah. And we'd rather have a committee that has signed off on a huge, expensive, bad idea and then be able to say, well, we did our due diligence, rather than try for something better. And that's what I think is really the bummer in a lot of the way that we talk about, you know, city building these days.
It is a bummer. There's safety in numbers when you're not fully competent. Yeah.
Totally. So let's move away from bummers now and go to the down zone. Chuck, tell me a little bit about, you know, if you've had time, you've been on the road, but what have you been watching, listening to, reading, enjoying lately that doesn't have to have anything to do with strong towns? Tell me what's on your media hit list.
Oh, I've got something for you. But it is interesting because a lot of times when I'm on the road, that's my time for reading and for listening to audiobooks. And now that I'm this whole tour, I'm traveling with someone. And so I can't do that as like freely and liberally. So maybe it will slow down a little bit over the fall, but I did manage to get through, and you're going to laugh at this. The book is called A Brief History of Doom. Oh, no.
Relaxing vacation reading.
Yeah. The subtitle is 200 Years of Financial Crises. And this one I knew going in was going to be like a heaping helping of confirmation bias. The core argument of the guy, Richard Vague, I think is how you say his name, V-A-G-U-E. So it's not V-A-U-G-E, but it's, I don't know, Vague. The way you say his name is Vague.
It's a little vague. Yeah,
it's a little vague. He makes the argument that it's not the bust that is the problem. It's the boom. And this is kind of straight out of Austrian economics in many ways, but it's, he argues that it is the run up in private sector debt that causes, all of our financial crises. And that by the time we get to the place where we're over leveraged and are deleveraging, it's too late to do anything productive. We have to start earlier. And he goes through case after case after case. And it's fascinating. It's a worthy take for people to ponder.
So cool. Well, I have less of a ponderous choice for the down zone, but I think it'll make you laugh too. I'm actually reading a novel called The Lager Queen of Minnesota. And it is.
I'm all in. Yeah.
I had a feeling you would be. It mentions Brainerd and like various other small towns. So it is by an author named J. Ryan Stradall, who his first book was mostly set in Minnesota as well. He's a Minnesota writer. He's like the person that when I was a bookseller, I would recommend to people who came in and they're like, you know, like my mom, my uncle, someone in my life who like likes good writing, but doesn't want to be actively bummed out by dark and stressful and violent things, which is 99% of the novels I read. I'll be honest, like they're looking for a book. What should I point them to? And I always pointed them towards J. Ryan Stradall. And his new book, The Lager Queen of Minnesota, is really great. It's about two sisters, one of whom takes her own path, bakes pies, and gets married, has kids, runs the family farm. And the other one of whom becomes a home brewer and then a craft brewer and then ends up like leveling her business up over time into becoming one of the largest brewers in Minnesota. And it follows them over the course of their whole lives. It's sort of like, it's this really deeply funny, lots of Midwest in jokes, like about the way that people talk that you will get a kick out of. And also has some like kind of interesting insights about like how we do economic development if you choose to read it through that lens, but mostly just like a warm, funny, well-written, structurally like interesting book that I think people would get a kick out of. So that's my recommendation, The Lager Queen of Minnesota.
Very sweet.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is what we've got for you today on Upzone. Thank you so much for listening in. If you'd like to support the show, you can always give us a 5-star review on iTunes or whatever you want. Or you can support the movement at strongtowns.org/membership. Oh, and by the way, this guy right here on the podcast with me wrote a book that's coming out in like 2 weeks, but you still have a little bit of time to pre-order. It is called Strong Towns, A Bottom-Up Revolution to Rebuild American Prosperity by Charles L. Marone Jr., which is the same as Chuck, to be clear. And you should definitely check that out at strongtowns.org/strongamerica and see while you're at it or coming to a city near you. Thanks so much and keep doing what you can to build a strong town.